BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Well, it is it's getting on for one in the morning now.
In early March 2022, days after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I was in my hotel room in Kyiv, and I was exhausted.
The piece we did today contained a lot of emotion.
Russian tanks were grinding towards the city, and everyone expected they'd be on the streets within days. We'd spent that day reporting on a city preparing for a battle.
Refugees, evacuees, about to become refugees, I suppose, leaving Kyiv station for the west.
Volunteers, mostly men, were lining up to fight. Tens of thousands of civilians, mostly women and children, were saying goodbye on crowded platforms, getting trains westwards.
And on the platform, a poor man called Alexander, distraught, holding, he couldn't let it go, a small toy ambulance his son had given him, said goodbye. Anybody who's had, who I feel emotional talking about it now, anybody who's had kids can get that.
What hit me hardest was that all those scenes could have come from Europe's 20th century wars. Freezing wind and snow, tearing at the crowds of terrified civilians. Young men lining up, being issued with weapons, making jokes, probably looking braver than they felt. I'd seen those old newsreels before, and now they were in my report. It was hard to write the script for my piece for the BBC News at 10 and to record it. My voice kept catching.
All the heartbreak of the war was on Alexander's face. He wouldn't let go of a toy ambulance his 8-year-old son had given him as he said goodbye.
Once we'd sent the piece to London, back in my room, the enormity of what was happening was getting to me.
Young boys, really. I mean, absolute boys. 18, 19-year-olds. Who'd volunteered going off to fight. I mean, it's ghastly to look at. I mean, they're brave boys, but by God, they've got their skateboard knee pads they probably had when they were 13. And they look like they're just off to a festival. They get a bit emotional about it, actually.
I study in economy.
And I'm studying biology.
I was in tears, I've got to admit. And even when I was trying to find the right words to put it together.
They have 3 days training and then the front line.
So I guess the question is, well, why didn't I show that on TV?
In these programmes, I'm taking you to some of the most difficult stories I've had to report and to the obstacles that stand between journalists and the truth. This time, opinion. Does it illuminate or obscure the truth?
Reporting is not about me thinking those kids are the same age as my son.
I'm Jeremy Bowen. This is Frontlines of Journalism, Episode 5. The why is as important as the what.
Trying to be a good journalist is not about me.
One of the most influential journalists in recent times is Dean Baquet. He was executive editor of the New York Times for 8 years, until 2022.
Grew up in Louisiana, had never been outside of Louisiana. Went to Columbia on a scholarship. Came back to New Orleans. I got an internship at the afternoon newspaper in New Orleans. And almost from the first day, fell in love with it. And over not too long a period of time, fell in love with investigative reporting. I believed that power needed to be held accountable. I'd grown up, in a part of the city where power had done some damage. I grew up in a poor part of New Orleans. And it made me question power. It made me question government. The techniques of investigative reporting should be part of the life of the paper.
I think it adds solidity and veracity to a story if you can see what people have done to get it.
That's right. That's right.
I think journalists need to keep their opinions out of it, however tempting it is to let rip. That doesn't mean I don't make judgments, but it needs to be based on what you found out. Even if you don't agree with it, you need to see how I got there. As my maths teacher used to say, show your workings. The why is as important as the what. But some people want more than the facts. They want opinions.
I'm always getting notes from people complaining, why don't you just, you know, write in a snarky way like this? Prove it. Prove it and then write it in a measured, powerful tone.
Opinion does have a place in journalism, but it needs to be labeled clearly. In the last episode, we heard from Nicole Hannah-Jones, a writer for the New York Times magazine whose 1619 project on race in America won her a Pulitzer Prize.
There's always been room for reported fact-based journalism with perspective and with opinion.
Nicole describes her journalism as a type of activism.
It's not just to get to the truth. It's to get to the truth so people have information so that they can decide what type of society that they want. When a journalist covers, for instance, Child Protective Services, that journalist is not exposing the failures of that agency just because they think it's interesting for people to know. They're exposing those failures because they want that system to protect children. But what is important is that you have objectivity of method, that you're ensured that you're being fair, that you're being accurate.
Everybody starts in journalism from the point of view of thinking, what is the importance of these stories?
Emily Bell is a professor at Columbia University School of Journalism in New York. She's on the board of the Guardian Media Group.
If you think you can't change the optics of a story, there's a big question about what are you doing in journalism in the first place? But then where do we draw that line of hyping up public outrage or interest, often for our own commercial interests, versus serving, if you like, the public's right to know.
So how much do you know about our project here?
I know that I'm, you know, Hannibal Lecter, and you're just going to get me to behave like Hannibal Lecter.
I've known Piers Morgan for years. When Piers was 28, Rupert Murdoch made him editor of the News of the World. Then Piers edited The Mirror, where he campaigned against the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Piers started out by writing about celebrities, and now he's one himself, and his very strong opinions are a big reason for that.
How you actually get to the truth in the modern age is a really interesting question. Mm.
And of course, some people say that you are part of the problem because your forceful style coarsens the debate, and it's really just a reflection of what's going on in your head.
I don't think so. I mean, look, I have a very, like, strident style, but I believe that style can be effective in getting to the truth. Now, there are other ways of doing it. There's the BBC way, which is a very important way, which is you take a strictly impartial view of everything and you try and wrestle the truth out of people that way. I would argue I've been just as successful, if not more so, by occasionally taking a massive sledgehammer. And that actually by doing that, occasionally you can bludgeon the truth out of them. I think both are quite effective tools.
When I last looked, Piers had 8.3 million followers on Twitter. In numbers, that's a bigger platform for him than his current show on Talk TV, owned by Rupert Murdoch. Do you think the way that you use social media, because it's quite polarizing, is that a barrier to people knowing the truth?
I think sometimes I overdo it, no question. But I would say that I always believe what I tweet in real time. It's my genuine opinion about something.
Do you think that because you're so well known, people's views of you affect how they perceive what you're putting out?
That's true. I think that's perfectly fair. Yeah. I don't think you can avoid that.
Well, you can avoid it, but by not being a, you know, such a huge noisy presence in public life.
But I like being a huge noisy presence.
I mean, your critics would say that maybe what really drives you is, you know, your own ego and your own sense of importance. And you say yourself in your book, you know, you describe being a national newspaper editor, an intoxicating sense of power and massively overinflated self-importance.
Yes.
But is that a good thing for journalism and for the truth?
Probably not. But it's true. I mean, ironically, it's true, but probably doesn't help. No.
You said once that if Twitter doesn't like it, Twitter can jump in the lake.
Right.
Dean Baquet of the New York Times.
To me, the essence of journalism is reporting, talking to people, and that's not Twitter. Twitter is talking at people. One of my last acts as executive editor was to write a note to the staff saying, look, Twitter's fine, but we pushed you to be on it 10 years ago when we were really trying to build a social media presence. You don't really have to be on it anymore. We also want you to be aware that Twitter, it's not the world. It's a glimpse. and sometimes an unhealthy glimpse. And I think it sometimes can get in your head. I think if Twitter decides they don't like a story, I think sometimes it keeps you from pushing forward with that story.
That human desire to be popular.
Yes, there's a human desire to be popular, exactly. And I think Twitter is that in spades.
Are you tempted to write about things your audience on social media might want to give you likes about?
That is a temptation I try very hard to resist.
George Monbiot, journalist and environmentalist, has over 500,000 followers on Twitter.
If I find myself thinking, ooh, people are going to love this, it's going to play to their prejudices, then I really try to check that impulse.
I posted a picture on Twitter of those two young lads I mentioned who were volunteering to fight in Kyiv, with the caption that after a few days' training, they'd be on the front line. Not many days later, 20 million people had seen it. For me, that was reporting. Piers Morgan takes sides.
I see no problem with expressing opinions. You're not exactly...
We have no problem at the BBC in terms of expressing forceful questions.
Right.
If you're getting at the truth...
What
impartiality isn't, BBC-wise, is, well, on the one hand and on the other hand, and the truth lies somewhere in between.
I know.
If that's what people do, then they're failing.
I know, but a strongly worded question is an opinion. You would say nothing you do is opinionated, but I would say every word that comes out of your mouth to me, in a way, is a form of opinion.
Well, I'd say it's analysis.
And it's a very fine line between analysis and opinion.
I think that I try and lay out what's happening and give my take on why it's happening. What I think is important in journalism is that you have to show how you got to that.
Yeah.
So it's not simply, this is just what I think. It's, this is happening because I've shown you this, and this, and it adds up to that.
I mean, it is your take on things. You said it yourself. I often see the outrage your reports provoke on Twitter. They would view you as one of the most opinionated people in the world.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. What I've found is that people may think they quite like your journalism and trust you, but when you get onto a subject that's close to their heart, you might report something they don't like.
Yes.
Writer and academic Emily Bell. I've had messages saying, I think your reporting of all the countries you've been to is great, but why are you so pro-Ukrainian? Or, I think your reporting is great on all things except Israel. You're clearly an anti-Semite. I mean, neither of those things are true.
That is something that everybody's experienced as a journalist. And now with an internet where you've also got vested interests, often quite powerful vested interests, in joining in with that, that's where you get this sort of incredible pressure.
I have been at the sharp end of attacks.
CNN chief international anchor Christiane Amanpour.
By various interest groups. Mm. There are many people who simply do not want to hear the truth. Tell you why I'm looking for my camera here, because I took a picture as I came in here. If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. This is George Orwell. He's standing right outside in your plaza.
This is the statue outside Broadcasting House.
That's exactly right.
George Orwell with a cigarette.
That's right.
Saying that. I looked at it myself as I came in today, and I thought, I'm so pleased that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, it's what it's all about. But to report on a story, you need to get to it. And that's not always easy.
Trains come in, everyone's pushing. They're desperate to get on. Good luck.
That's next time. Frontlines of Journalism is presented by me, Jeremy Bowen. The producer is Georgia Catt. The assistant producer is Sam Peach. Additional research by Rob Byrne. Series mixing by Jackie Marjoram. The series editor is Philip Sellers. Please rate and leave a review to help others find us.
What happens when a life coach takes over your life? For the last 18 months, I've been investigating claims that a UK mentoring company is actually a cult.
What we're doing is helping human beings actually gain control of themselves, not for us to gain control of you.
I don't know who I am anymore, bro. Absolutely no idea.
The only money he had to give them was his house.
Controlling its members.
It was more about apportioning blame to my parents. these toxic groups called families.
Intimidating critics.
When I'd asked questions,
they said, if you leave and you turn against us, we have all those personal recordings of yours.
We'll come for you next.
How do you feel, Paul, about the fact that so many people think you're running a cult?
We're not running a cult. Because they don't know what a cult is. They're slurring us. They're smearing us.
I'm Katrin Nye, and from BBC Radio 4, this is A Very British Cult. Listen on BBC Sounds.